The Man After God's Own Heart, Chapter 74. A large and beautiful tent is being erected in Jerusalem, close to the palace of David. The king is giving instructions as how he would have it set up. Ah, why does David have this tent erected? For whom is this tent? Children, you must listen attentively. During the time of the judges, all the Israelites traveled to Shiloh 3 times a year to celebrate the great feasts. The tabernacle stood there. The Ark of the Covenant was there. The priests of the Lord were there also. Shiloh was the central place where all the Israelites came together to worship the Lord. But all that has changed. Shiloh was destroyed by the Philistines. The tabernacle stood at Gibeon. The Ark of the Covenant was taken first by the Philistines into their own country. Afterward, it found a place in Kirjath-Jearim in Abinadab's house, where it remained for years. Saul, the first king of Israel, did nothing to change this. Saul did not concern himself about the worship of the Lord. But now David is king. The Lord has blessed him in all things. He has become rich and strong. Jerusalem is the new capital of the nation. Blessed thoughts slowly arise in David's mind. Wouldn't it be pleasant, he thinks, if my people again had a fixed place where everyone could worship the Lord together? The longer he thinks about this plan, the more decided he becomes. He wants to improve the manner of their worship. Do you know how? He will fetch the Ark of the Covenant and bring it to Jerusalem. In all his success and prosperity, he does not forget the Lord. What do we do? When we are sick or in misery, yes, then we pray to the Lord and ask him to cure us and to deliver us from our misery. If the Lord hears our prayer, what then? Alas, we so often forget the Lord, do we not? However, David cannot forget the Lord. He fears the Lord with a perfect heart. He loves the Lord sincerely. For that reason, this tent is made ready near his palace, where the Ark of the Covenant may rest. When everything is ready, he sends messengers throughout the entire land to gather all the people with his princes and rulers. Everyone who was able hastened to Jerusalem. David tells them about his plans. Yes, oh yes, that is very good. We are very much pleased, was the answer of the people, and they were glad. Come, says David, let us go for the ark. For that purpose he had a new cart made. Because of the great respect he had for the Ark of the Covenant, he would not use an old cart. No, it must be a new cart. No expense or trouble is too great for David. With an army of 30,000 men, he leaves Jerusalem and goes to Kirjath-Jearim. The cart stands in front of Abinadab's house in Kirjath-Jearim. Ahio and Uzzah, 2 sons of Abinadab, carry the ark out of the house, where it had been for so long a time. Carefully they place it on the cart. Silently David and the thousands of Israelites look on. Ahio walks forward to walk before the cart and guide the oxen that must pull the cart. His brother Uzzah will remain with the cart to take care of the ark. When all things are ready, the procession begins to move forward. The king and his army follow in the rear. It is a solemn moment. David and those with him have instruments of music with them, harps, trumpets, and timbrels. They play these instruments to the honor of God. They move onward toward Jerusalem. They go forward easily and calmly. Suddenly, the oxen stumble, the cart shakes, and the Ark of the Covenant is in danger of falling. Uzzah, who was walking close by, quickly puts out his hand to keep the Ark from falling. And then, at once, he falls dead upon the ground. The music suddenly stops. Everyone stares, filled with fright at what has taken place. All gladness has left David's heart. He had meant to do well. Didn't he do it to the honor of God? Didn't he do it because he wanted to worship the Lord? He also did it so that his people could worship the Lord, didn't he? But now, Uzzah lies there, dead. No, Uzzah did not deserve death. Uzzah only wanted to prevent the ark from falling. In the Bible we read, "And David was displeased." That means he became angry. In sadness he shakes his head. Is this the way his plan must end? What do you think about this, boys and girls? Do you also think it a bit too severe? It does seem so, doesn't it? But it is not. All things, yes, everything the Lord does is good. The Lord cannot be unjust. That is impossible. David meant well, but he went about it in the wrong way. The ark was not allowed to be placed upon a cart, but must be carried at all times. The Lord had commanded this. Probably you will say this about it. The Philistines placed the ark on a cart, didn't they? Yes, that is true. But the Philistines were heathens. They did not know any better. But David knew better. At least he should have known better, because all this was written in the book of the law. It was very impudent of David for not having first inquired into this. The Lord will not be worshipped as we want to do it, but the Lord must be worshipped as he has commanded. For that reason the Lord punished Uzzah when he stretched out his hand to hold the ark. At the same time, it was a serious warning for David. Today, many people want to worship the Lord in their own manner, and if we also are in accord with them, the anger of the Lord will rest upon us too. Let us never forget that. David is now angry, but he is not allowed to be angry. Instead, he should be thankful that the Lord did not do as he did at Beth Shemesh, when 50,000 people lost their lives. What is to be done now? David fears to go further. He is afraid more unpleasant things will happen. But may the ark stand outside on the side of the road? No, but that is not necessary. Near to the spot where this unhappy event took place stands the house of the God-fearing Levite Obed-Edom. No one is willing to take the ark into his house. All are afraid. But Obed-Edom will give his home and life for it. The honor of Israel's God is worth more to him than his own life. "Let the ark of the covenant be brought into my house," he said. This is done immediately. Silently and disappointedly, David returns to Jerusalem. 3 months pass by. David receives the message that the Lord has blessed Obed-Edom. Yes, the God-fearing Levite is blessed to such an extent that all other people can notice it. It attracts everyone's attention. When David hears this, he can bear it no longer. By this, the Lord shows that Uzzah was slain not because David wanted to bring the ark to Jerusalem, but because he did not carry it as the Lord had commanded. David gathers the people together a second time. see them all leaving Jerusalem for the second time. Now no new cart is built, but the priests Zadok and Abiathar and the Levites will carry the ark. David, that is the proper way. No doubt, the priests first cover the ark with a cloth. The Levites carefully lift the ark by the staves and lay it upon their shoulders. Now no accident occurs. David is so happy that he leaped and danced before the ark. They soon approach the gates of Jerusalem. The Israelites shout for joy. With song and the sound of the trumpet, the Ark of the Covenant is placed in the tent on the exact spot which David had prepared for this purpose. When the procession passed David's palace, a woman stands before one of the windows. She is Michal, the daughter of Saul, David's wife. She looks at them. When she sees David leaping and dancing among the people, a mocking smile comes upon her face. She thinks, "Pshaw, is that behavior becoming a king? No, my father would never do what David is doing. He was too refined for that." She becomes angry with David. She despises him. However, it was well that David did not see her, otherwise it would have troubled him. When the ark finally is placed in the tent, the priests offer peace offerings. There is a feast in Jerusalem, not an ungodly feast, but a feast to the honor of the God of Israel. Oh, if only the feast in our country were to the honor of God. David gives to each person a loaf of bread, a good piece of flesh, and a flagon of wine. Later he goes to his home. A happy smile is seen upon his countenance. But see, Michal comes to meet him. Michal is not glad. She looks angry. Her eyes sparkle. She is ashamed of her husband. "Are you a king?" she asks scornfully. "I cannot understand that you are not ashamed of yourself. You are leaping and dancing among those common people. No great king would do that. By doing this, all the Israelites will lose their respect for you. They will begin to despise you." Immediately, David feels the ugliness, the ungodliness, the pride of his wife, and this hurts him. "No, Michal," he answers seriously, "you are mistaken. The Lord made me king in the place of your father Saul. The Lord helped me win the battles against many enemies. Shouldn't I be thankful to him? Michal, I hope that the Lord will spare me from pride. I will not be king in heaven, but there I will sing and rejoice eternally with these poor people of God. There we will always praise the Lord." The Lord also saw that mocking smile of Michal. He heard her bitter, insulting words. The punishment she received for her pride was that she had no children, and this was a great humiliation for any woman in Israel. Pride comes before a fall. One day, as the king sits upon his throne in his beautiful palace, he reflects upon the years of his youth. How different it is now. Then he was a shepherd, despised by his brothers. Now he is one of the greatest kings upon the earth. Once he was a poor fugitive who was chased by Saul as a wild animal. At that time he constantly lived in danger of his life. Then he was an outcast, chased and even separated from his wife. He had to hide in holes and caves, and many times without a roof over his head. But now, the Lord has given him rest. No enemy would venture to fight against him. He lives in the most beautiful house in Jerusalem, and is daily with his wives and children. Formerly he was a shepherd of a few sheep. Now he is king over a great and numerous people who love their king and honor him. Such a tremendous difference before and now. Oh, when David thinks of this, he is humbled. He cannot understand that the Lord has blessed him so much. And why did the Lord do this? Because David was such a good man? Because David deserved it? No, he knows better. He was a fool many times. Often he did wrong things. He was a deceiver and a liar. Many times he doubted the faithfulness of God. But why did the Lord bless David so richly? Why? Oh, David does not know. He surely did not deserve it. It is grace, and grace alone. The reason for those blessings is not in David, but in God. True thankfulness fills his soul. Filled with these thoughts, he looks outside. There he sees the tent in which the Ark of the Covenant stands, the Ark which is a sign of God's presence, the Ark upon which the Lord dwells. Suddenly he straightens. A thought enters his mind, a nice thought, a thought which causes him to blush with gladness. Yes, yes, that he will do, that he will do. He will build a magnificent temple for the Ark of the Covenant. Yes, for the complete service of the Lord. Immediately he calls his friend Nathan the prophet. Listen, the king says to him, I live in a beautiful palace, in a house built of cedar wood, while the Ark of the Lord is only in a tent. David is silent for a short time. Nathan understands immediately what the king means. His eyes shine with gladness. Before David could speak further, he answers, Go, do all that is in your heart, for the Lord is with you. Nathan means, I already understand what you want to do. The Lord will bless you in this work, David. Go ahead with what is on your mind. But that night, when Nathan lays upon his bed, the Lord comes to him and says, Nathan, tomorrow morning you must go to David and tell him that he may not build me a temple. He has fought too many battles. He has shed too much blood. No, not he, but his son shall do it. A son of David shall be king after him. He will fight no wars. He will be a prince of peace, and he shall build a temple for the service of the Lord. But Nathan, tell David also that I will build him a house that will last to all eternity. This means that David and his descendants will not be cast away by the Lord, but that many of David's offspring shall sit upon his throne. The kingdom of David shall be unbreakable, because one day from him the King of Kings, who is Jesus, shall be born, and he shall reign to all eternity. The following morning Nathan goes to David and tells him everything the Lord had spoken that night. David does not become sad or discouraged when he hears that not he, but his son may build the temple. Very well, he said, let my son, who will be king after me, build the temple. He goes to the tent where the ark stands and thanks the Lord. David is humbled under the blessings which the Lord bestowed upon him. Do you know what David does? He begins to collect many things, gold and silver, diamonds and pearls, copper and iron, purple and linen. In short, he gathers together materials which will be needed to build the temple. On the other side, Jordan, near Mahanaim, where Ishbosheth once reigned, lies the small village of Lodabar. In one of the houses of this village lies a forgotten prince, Mephibosheth. He is a son of Jonathan. Nobody knows him. This prince is afflicted because he is a cripple on both his feet. When his father Jonathan was slain on the hill of Gilboa, he was only a small boy. His nurse, who took care of him, picked him up and fled with him. She stumbled and let him fall, causing him to be lame. Now he has grown older. He lives quietly and peacefully in Lodabar. One day a few messengers come to him and tell him that he must come to the king, to David. Mephibosheth is afraid. What must he do there? Does David want to harm him? Will David kill him because he is Saul's grandson? With trembling heart, he goes to Jerusalem. He will not, he cannot be disobedient. He enters the palace of this great monarch and bows low before David. He waits. What will the king say to him? Mephibosheth, sounds the friendly voice, you need not be afraid. I will do you no harm. You are a son of Jonathan, are you not? I have not forgotten my faithful friend. I will never forget Jonathan. But he is dead. I can do nothing for him. However, I am glad that I can do something for his son, Mephibosheth. From now on, you are staying in Jerusalem. Yes, you will receive an honorable place in my house. You may continually eat at my table. You are my guest, Mephibosheth. Children, Mephibosheth did not expect this. It is above all expectation. In addition, he receives all the fields and vineyards which at one time belonged to Saul. Ziba, a former servant of Saul, will work this land for him. He, with his sons, shall pick the grapes in the vineyard when they are ripe. He also will reap the grain and store it in the barn. Mephibosheth is again a rich and honored man. David solemnly had promised Jonathan that he would take care of his children. This promise he keeps. This promise he now fulfills. Do you keep a promise when you make one? Or do you forget your promises? How often we forget, do we not? David did not forget, but took care of Mephibosheth as though he were his own child.